V-minus 87. GCC headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. At long last, the day had come. After the better part of a year of planning, almost all of it under the radar and much of it entirely secret, the day of William Godfrey's formal swearing-in as inaugural chairman of the Global Contact Commission was finally here. Godfrey hadn't had any formal say in the U.S. Security Service's sensible decision to close down Birchwood for the day to eliminate the risk of fatal overcrowding, but he was pleased with the decision nonetheless. With the key site of Contact Day's Ground Zero out of the media's reach, their attention had to turn somewhere else, and Buenos Aires was just the place. An altogether less welcome security operation at the nearby Gravesen Hotel had threatened to derail the inauguration gala before it began, but Godfrey most certainly did have a say on the matter of whether the event should go ahead as planned, and found ready agreement on this point from President Slater and his other key allies. When the show was as big as this one, it quite simply had to go on. Until at least the following day, the true nature of what was found at the Gravesen, and more importantly how it had been found, would be kept between those who truly needed to know. The items discovered in the room, pinpointed by intelligence agents, included an array of firearms and a flag proclaiming support for the risible GeoSov movement. Godfrey's in-house security agents informed him of the discovery, revealing that intelligence pointed towards a foiled hostage-taking plot against President Slater and the Japanese Prime Minister. And his understanding was that no other leaders aside from Slater and her Japanese counterpart had yet been informed. Unsurprisingly, the scale of the early morning security operation proved too vast to stay under the radar. As far as the media knew, though, it had simply been sparked by a tip-off about a potential time bomb planted within the hotel. The official line held that nothing had been found, with many reading between the lines to speculate that the GeoSovs themselves had called in a fake bomb threat at the Gravesen as a means of disrupting the day's GCC gala, given that several guests of honor were staying there. Now, well into the evening and with many formalities behind him, Godfrey was minutes away from the speech that would formally establish the GCC as the organization through which many of the world's most prosperous nations had committed to channeling all contact-related efforts. If the messengers came calling within the borders of a GCC member state, or if a previously placed artifact was discovered, the matter would immediately fall under the GCC's competence. William Godfrey, leader of leaders, would be humanity's official point of contact. This in itself was not controversial. Indeed, both direct polling and social media meta-analysis had consistently highlighted Godfrey's position as the individual deemed the second most appropriate representative of humanity in a future scenario involving direct contact. Godfrey knew that second place to Dan McCarthy was no bad place to be, even though he ultimately wanted to be in first position in the public's collective opinion, and he took heart from the fact that he was head and shoulders above any other Western leader. Predictably, the data showed that citizens of many countries believed that their elected national leader should take the reins. This was less true in the United States and United Kingdom than anywhere else, due to Godfrey's success in having positioned himself as a relatively safe pair of hands during his challenging stewardship of the GCC's predecessor organizations. When the world needed to be united, Godfrey had done as good a job as the public seemed to believe anyone else could have. On the issue of future contact, however, global unity was in distinctly short supply. Feelings ran high in China in particular, when it was generally felt that Godfrey would always exhibit a Western bias and discount Chinese interests. Other nations felt similarly, with the Russian president stating that a new organization with Godfrey at the helm might as well be called the North Atlantic Contact Commission and move its headquarters to Washington to be done with the charade of inclusivity. Before long, dozens of countries with strong economic ties to Beijing and Moscow had formally stated their collective concerns. Fortunately for Godfrey, he retained sufficient support among Western populations to win the backing of Western leaders, and he emerged as the clear choice in an advisory straw poll conducted at the first of several UN meetings dedicated to the new organization's formation. When Chinese Premier Ding Ziyang withdrew from the discussion process and stood alongside the Russian president to announce a competing organization to be known as the Earth Liaison Forum, Godfrey didn't blink, despite the immediate exodus of several dozen other countries from the GCC discussions. Instead, he held the situation up to his increasingly tentative backers as an example of what would happen if they allowed their countries to be tied into an organization with nations apt to behave in such a childish way. The Chinese and Russians had revealed their hand, he said, showing beyond doubt that they were willing to play geopolitics even over an issue as important as future contact. Godfrey warned that any contact-focused international organization, which included such countries, even if it was initially led by a Westerner, would ultimately fall into the hands of a spiteful individual like Ding. The strength of Godfrey's words surprised no one, given his historically proven penchant for controversial statements, but they did have the desired effect. His words echoed a similar concern which had once been expressed by Richard Walker himself. When discussing the possibility of a sovereign one-world government, the old stalwart had insisted that the Cold War had never ended in the minds of the enemies of freedom, and that any supranational institution would inevitably come to be led by an anti-American and Chinese-backed candidate, nationality irrelevant, propped up by the increasing number of small countries who found themselves dependent on Chinese investment and trade. Today, though, the grand top-floor conference room of Godfrey's GCC building had been refitted to receive political representatives from the countries who mattered, those on his side. There were no surprising omissions from this list, with India being the only nation Godfrey had seriously hoped to be able to talk out of its misgivings. His failure to do so had the frustrating and damaging effect of meaning that the ELF's affiliated countries housed a slight majority of Earth's human population, dealing a blow to the credibility of his global organization in the eyes of many. But the eyes and minds of citizens in all countries were currently focused on the right place, Buenos Aires, and as Godfrey began his slow walk to the podium from which he would address them, he knew he had one man to thank for the fact that the entire inauguration hadn't been derailed by a disaster that could well have torpedoed the good ship GCC before it even left the docks. Without Dan McCarthy, things would have turned out very differently. Godfrey was particularly grateful that Dan had raised the alarm, despite having been treated badly by American agents, if reports were true, but the broader point that Dan had been contacted again raised a host of new questions and concerns. Resentment wasn't quite the right word, but Godfrey had always been envious of Dan's communicative relationship with the messengers. Dan had fallen into his important role, Godfrey considered. Greatness had been thrust upon him. He hadn't spent decades doing whatever it took to climb a political ladder that ultimately led all the way to the top of the GCC, as Godfrey had, and he didn't even seem to want the power he had been granted, much less appreciated. The silver lining for Godfrey was that if the messenger's favored point of contact had to be someone else, there were 7 billion worse choices than Dan McCarthy. For not only had Dan shared the message he received and in doing so prevented utter pandemonium, he had also kept it out of the news. When it came to the crunch, Godfrey was pleased that Dan knew how to handle things with their effect on long-term stability in mind. Admittedly, Godfrey did consider it quite probable that Emma Ford, a truly formidable PR expert, was behind Dan's recent history of good decisions. He knew that Emma had likely convinced Dan to meet him publicly in Birchwood before DS1's lifetime ago launch, and similarly, to attend Richard Walker's high-profile funeral, where he and Godfrey had shared a fairly cordial discussion about how much they both detested the crocodile tears of most of the other attendees. Godfrey and Emma had clashed considerably during his time at the GSC, to put it mildly, but Emma had readily laid personal vendettas to one side in pursuit of the common good. In this way, and this way only, Godfrey's complicated relationship with Emma and Dan wasn't too unlike his relationship with President Slater, another individual with whom he had engaged in brutal public disagreement before they agreed to bury the hatchet when it was in their shared interests to work together. This had never been more apparent than earlier in the day, When Slater made an executive decision to personally loop Godfrey in on exactly what had led to the discovery at the Gravison. Before their mid-afternoon meeting, Godfrey had known only one thing more than the public, that a genuine Geosov plot to take Slater hostage had been foiled. It was thanks to Slater that Godfrey knew Dan McCarthy had been responsible for the tip-off. It was thanks to Slater that he knew the messengers were back, and given that the foiling of the plot had saved his GCC inauguration, Godfrey's mind made the somewhat understandable leap to consider that the messengers had just quietly chosen a side. When they wanted to come back for real, he now believed more firmly than ever that they would come to him. As a grandfather clock chimed on the hour, Godfrey reached his podium. Not quite nervous, but certainly feeling a kind of pre-speech excitement he hadn't experienced in a while, he took a deep breath. Today was the day William Godfrey had been born to see, and the Global Contact Commissions was the throne on which he had been born to sit. The Geosovs would be dealt with in good time, and the implications of the messenger's apparent return would be debated long and hard in days to come as other key figures were looped in. But for now, nothing else mattered. Godfrey's stage was set, and the one thing he was not going to do was let anything else get in the way.